have a quorum, and we will invite our testifier to the stand. What was her? Special guest.
Good morning.
Morning. Please state your name for the record.
Brenda Caselius, Commissioner of Education, and I have with me Rose Hermanson, who can also help me with questions around teacher evaluation as well as kind of history of seniority. So I brought her along with me today. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll just let you proceed with your testimony, and then we'll just open it up to questions.
Sure. Thank you again, Mr. Chair and conferees and members, for allowing me to testify today on House File 1870 and on teacher seniority provisions. We've met a couple of times privately, as well as with the governor, Representative Peterson, as well as with Senator Olson. I met with her privately as well as with the governor, and then sent letter as well to both committees expressing some of my concerns that we still have outstanding with the bill. Most of those have to do with the timing of the bill, because it hinges on having an effective teacher evaluation system in place. We have just now launched our teacher evaluation task force, getting ready to institute some of the provisions that were written in statute last year that were agreed upon in a bipartisan way and we felt really good about. And we want to be able to give that work some time to be able to move before we move forward. Also, I wanted to just mention that there are a number of reforms that we are already currently engaged in that came out of the legislature from last year, as well as the NCLB waiver. Those are replicating high-performing charters, early childhood, looking at third grade reading and literacy, and a focus on teacher and principal quality. And those reforms are reforms that we know will really get at the achievement gap, and we're very interested in moving forward with those reforms and continuing that work with our teachers and giving them an opportunity to kind of build the momentum. I think reform has to be strategic and has to be deliberate, and I think timing matters in everything that you do in terms of a sequential way. And we want to place a strong value on collaboration with our teachers, bringing them to the table, working with them in this change. In my 23-year career, I have done a lot of school turnaround, and I've been pretty courageous about some of that turnaround, even fresh starting schools. But that's a last solution to it. Really, you ought to be able to work with teachers in a very collaborative way, work with great principals, and help them move change in a school. And so I'm here today really just to answer your questions about any outstanding questions that you have of me about this bill and about how it will impact school change and school reform and what the research may or may not say about doing accelerated turnaround for students so that we can get better achievement out of them. And then finally, I just want to thank you for deliberating on school reform. We have an urgency in our schools to do better. We and the governor and I put forth a 7-point plan last year. We've been working that 7-point plan, and we feel really good about the reforms that we've been able to make, and we want to continue to move forward on those as well as get great results for our kids across the state. So with that, I'll just open it up for any questions that you may have as well of me. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Commissioner, and thank you again for joining us this morning. Just for the record, for the committee's sake, if you could just go over, I know you had written a letter in the past going over some of the concerns that you had about House File 1870. If you could go over some of the concerns that you and the administration have on House File 1870, and then maybe more importantly, some suggested alternatives as to how we can approach this issue, if you're indeed interested in dealing with keeping these effective teachers in the classroom, if you could.
And excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, is it possible for on the committee for us to get a copy of that letter? Is it possible for the, I don't know if the pages, if there's one that they could.
Cody actually left the room to go.
Thank you.
We'll make a copy.
Okay.
So.
Right, Mr. Chair. Some of the concerns that I have are the timing of this legislation in regard to the sequencing with the other reforms that we're doing. That's a big concern of mine because you get reform overload. So I want to be able to time and sequence out the types of reforms that we're doing and enacting in our schools so that there's just not so much that teachers and others are doing at one time. Because really when the teachers start to work on their own quality and work on their own practice, that really takes a lot of effort and a lot of time for them to work collaboratively together in order to be able to build their craft and their toolkit. Often I'm asked the question, how are we going to close these achievement gaps? And it's a very complex answer. But the number one thing is that teachers have to have a really strong toolkit. They have to have the instructional methodologies within their grasp to be able to use those. So that's a huge piece of it. And that takes time to build your craft. I have concerns about the teacher evaluation not being done and that this being ahead of it. I'm concerned about the 35%. That's no secret. I talked to it last year, the 35% of non-tested areas. So the fairness issue in how we're going to measure that 35% in our non-tested areas and how that might pan out. How will you test a PE teacher or a school nurse or a psychologist or a business teacher? Because really our math teachers and our reading teachers, 3 through 6 really only, are the ones who have value-added tests available at this time. And, of course, there's been a number of states that have tried to create tests but then have backed off of those, which could be very costly to create those tests. So that system hasn't been put in place. And, of course, the underpinning of a really effective ULA system that's being suggested would be having a very effective and fair and defensible teacher evaluation. So I think that we could look at this issue later when we had more information, but at this time, we're just really trying to create that. I have also a concern that teachers may now, with being on the teacher evaluation committee, developing these new models, may spend time thinking about this seniority provision rather than thinking about being innovative. They may protect a little bit more than be a little bit more innovative and courageous around a teacher evaluation and the methods when they're developing those new tools. And so we wanted to be able to have a robust teacher evaluation and be able to move forward with that. I'm concerned about data privacy with teachers and their information. Obviously, everybody's aware of what's happened with publicly displayed data on teacher effectiveness. We did put in the teacher evaluation last year upon conference committee that teacher data would be, evaluation data would be personnel data. However, in this law, it mentions that there would be seniority lists. And so I'm not sure, and someone could request the seniority list, and I'm not sure how those lists would be developed or shared. I also have concerned about hard-to-staff schools, and this was a concern with the teacher evaluation as well, and I'm not sure how we're going to address it, but how do you get your best teachers to your hard-to-staff schools when they know that the consequences are so great for them in terms of possible arbitrary layoff or possible poor evaluation because they're working with students sometimes who are several grade levels behind? And then how can we incentivize, encourage? So there's a whole other piece to this that I think is missing when we look at our schools that are hard to staff, like our rural schools hard to staff, or American Indian schools are hard to staff, or where it's hard to staff in our high poverty schools. And oftentimes we need our best teachers there and assigned to those students. So that's a concern. I noticed in the bill that there was language right off of the alt cert that said that a limited license is not considered a provisional license, and I had some questions about that and what that meant. So that's not a deal breaker, but I was just wondering why a limited license is not considered a provisional license. And, I mean, I could go on with several other concerns, and I would just say my major concerns are that of timing, wanting to get the teacher evaluation, wanting to have these things in order in terms of our overall reforms and how we roll out reforming our schools, and then the data privacy, and also hard-to-staff schools and getting the best teachers to our students.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Commissioner, and welcome. Could you discuss briefly the waiver and the implementation thereof, and how you would be recommending a process of managing layoffs under the waiver and the promises that have been made in the waiver? Could you help us understand your approach on that?
Just before you answer, Commissioner, what's being handed out to the members is the Commissioner's letter outlining her concerns, as well as my response as the author to the administration and the Commissioner's concerns. So you can see that interaction. My apologies, Commissioner. Proceed.
Thank you. And our teacher, Representative Erickson, to your question, and Representative Peterson, last year when we passed our teacher evaluation, we put in language that we would be able to use that information for personnel decisions. We even laid out in there what those discipline could be, and it laid out all the way through termination in the teacher evaluation. It also laid out that a school administrator could choose to do any of those or something other. So it granted the school administrator authority in our teacher evaluation, and I think that's what the USDOE saw in our statute, and they actually commended us on our teacher evaluation statute, and they issued us the waiver. We wouldn't have been approved had we not met their requirements.
So, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Casalius, the implementation of the waiver occurs when, and will administrators have that authority immediately?
The implementation of the waiver is already current. We are in development and must have our teacher evaluation systems finished by 2014. And your last question, Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair, the waiver that was granted for NCLB to Minnesota begins in this upcoming school year, correct?
It begins immediately, Representative Peterson, and it goes for 3 years.
Yes. So my question was, does what you just said apply then immediately, that administrators have the authority to lay off teachers accordingly, and on what basis? I mean, I'm a little confused there.
No, that's in our, Representative Peterson, that's in our teacher evaluation legislation, that principals will have the authority to use the teacher evaluation for personnel decisions up to termination or anything else that an administrator deems appropriate. And so that is already in our legislation that we passed last year. In terms of the waiver, we are in development of those systems. You did not have to have those systems in place until 2014.
Representative Erickson.
Yeah, one follow-up, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much. But, Commissioner, according to the waiver, there cannot be ineffective teachers in these schools then that will have the parameters that have been laid out in the waiver. So I'm just wondering how the principals then can immediately use that when there cannot be ineffective teachers in the classroom. How's that going to play out?
Representative Peterson, there's two
Representative Erickson.
Excuse me. Representative Erickson, Representative Peterson.
Oh, my name's right
there. There are two provisions here within the waiver. One is the teacher evaluation system, and that has to be in place by 2014.
Yes.
So they understand that we're developing that and getting that together, and really by the 14-15, by the end of the 15 year, we'll be out of our waiver and we'll have to either re-up or hopefully ESCA will be reauthorized. So in terms of that, it's sound and we're set to go. In terms of our own process around kind of turnaround schools and how we're going to work with turnaround schools, we have currently a SIG grant, a school improvement grant from the federal government that allows for four models. One is the removal of the principal and the staff. They have a transformative model. They have close the school or close the school or transform it to a charter. So there's several other principles within the SIG program that they have. But under our waiver, we are going to have flexibility to work with local school districts around how we work with them with their personnel decisions. However, they still have to undergo under the principles of the SIG grant, but not as strict in terms of removal. And the waiver was silent on ULA.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, but I'm still confused because I'm reading on 104 and 105, and MDE will work with each priority school's LEA to determine if the current principal is an effective leader and has proven to be effective in improving school achievement in a turnaround effort. MDE will require all priority schools to adopt an MDE-approved principal evaluation tool, and if all of this has to be in effect now, I'm presuming that you have some tool ready, and then it goes on to deal with ineffective teachers. So I guess I'll continue to work with the department, Mr. Chair, to figure out how this can come together. But it sounds to me like we have, in effect, a quasi-new layoff procedure that has to go with this waiver based on what's stated in the plan.
Commissioner, I view this meeting as one more step and hopefully a process that will end in an agreement. But in order for that to happen, I guess we would need to know kind of the baseline expectation of what we have for the outcome of this meeting. And so if you could maybe explain just generally your feeling as to the effectiveness of current law as it relates to ULAs, and what changes do you think need to be made to current law in order to have the ability to retain the most highly effective teachers?
Well, Representative Peterson, I think that the current law has an orderly process in place for laying off teachers. I don't see that is a barrier for getting moving out our poorest performing teachers. As I said, I've been in this work for 23 years, and I fortunately have been able to work alongside the union to remove ineffective teachers. Is it hard? Yeah, it can be hard, but it should be hard to remove somebody from their job. And I think that if you do your work, you can remove those teachers. It's when you get into a situation where you have a very difficult school challenge where many things are broken and not working, that you have to intervene more aggressively. And so in terms of the current ULA process, I think that it works. I like that there is statute in our statute that school districts can negotiate these things locally. Many have. And I think that that's where it should be, that local school districts should be able to negotiate these provisions. And I'm still trying to understand the state's economic interest in making policy at the state level rather than allowing local school districts to negotiate these provisions.
So just generally, your position is that generally current law works, works well?
Yeah, my position is that I think that the local school districts have negotiated agreements so that they work for them in their context.
And Commissioner, you know, as well as many of the members on the committee, that the locally negotiated agreements that have been made in this state are generally related to, in fact, no one has been able to point out yet, where actual teacher effectiveness is being used as a part of those decision-making processes. Those exceptions that have been negotiated are generally around licensure or some kind of maybe an applied learning situation or something like that. They really are detached from a student-centric view of performance on those issues. And so there have been instances over the last few years where some very high-profile layoffs have happened, and you had mentioned that the current law there isn't any proof or that the current law is working well. Do you believe that laying off teachers of the year, for example, is proof that quite possibly we're laying off effective teachers to the detriment of students in the classroom?
Well, Representative Peterson, I think that when a teacher of the year gets laid off, they're typically a really good teacher, typically. And I would say that they would probably get a job in another district. Now, it would be a loss to that district and a gain to another district. Same thing with ineffective teachers. When you move an ineffective teacher, they might lose an ineffective teacher in one district, but then they would go to another district. So I think that you have the issue of looking at how you would use teacher performance. And for this situation, with this current legislation, I think we're ahead of ourselves in the game in terms of our timing of this legislation. Could it work in the future when we had more information and future legislators like yourself could look at it? Absolutely. But right now, I believe strongly that the teacher evaluation system still needs to be determined so that it's a fair and orderly process so that we can have the best information possible as we lay off our teachers.
Yeah, and that actually played itself out. A recent teacher of the year was laid off in Minneapolis, and indeed they did get rehired, and they were rehired in the suburbs. And I would contend to you that Minneapolis was the district that probably had the highest need for that highly effective teacher. So I agree that situation certainly plays itself out. Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wanted to comment on several of the comments. First of all, dealing with our current system that we have, saying that it's an orderly process and it works, or that it's orderly and fair. It may be an orderly process, but I would vehemently argue that it is not fair and that it does not work. An orderly process does not make it a good process. We could go by birth dates and it would be orderly, but it has nothing to do with necessarily what's best for the kids. It's orderly. It makes sense. It's easy to do. Nobody has to think because there's just a list there, and we go by that. Your comments on that effective teacher, if that effective teacher gets laid off and we talk about them going to another district, great if they were able to go to another district and stay there, but often what happens is they go from one district, they go to another district, get laid off there, go to another district, get laid off, and they say, I'm done with this. I'm done with teaching. I'm not going to go through this for my career. If nobody cares about how effective I am, why in the world do I want to stay in this career? If all that matters is when I sign my contract, that to me is not a process that works. And it does not take into consideration a teacher's experience. Remember, seniority has nothing to do with their experience. That teacher who was teacher of the year, who may have been there for 3 years, 4 years, however many years, and then gets laid off, goes to another school district, they're at zero seniority. So now that great teacher is at the bottom of the list if it comes to another layoff. And I think that's why we see so many teachers giving up. Because at what point are you safe in a layoff? How many years do you have to have? 10 years? No. I've been down that road. I had 10 years experience, zero seniority. I'm about to have 26 years experience with zero seniority next year, as well as my entire school building. So to say that this is an orderly process, yes. To say it's fair and that it works, no, not at all. And I will get back to going back to the note, the waiver. We have by MDE language. The work group will include in their recommended model teacher quality and current tenure practices that are linked with teacher evaluation, retention, and dismissal decisions. You keep talking about the evaluation and its tool as a discipline and its tool of removing ineffective teachers. Fine. But in a layoff has nothing to do with discipline. It's not about punishing teachers. It's about a situation where, for whatever reason, you need to let some teachers go, dismissal. And who are you going to retain? Are we going to continue the practice of retaining teachers just because they've been there longer? Are we going to move to a process where we are keeping teachers because they are better for those students? And I look at this, and this says that we need to look at layoff. That's a dismissal practice. That's a retention practice. So I do think we need to include layoffs in that, and the sooner, the better. You're concerned about the timing. 5 years from now, exactly how much time do you think we should wait before we are looking at a process that keeps the more effective teachers in the classroom? How much time would the department think that we need to make this happen?
Representative Wolf, two things. One is, in the waiver, we are in development of those models, and we've said what components we're going to have as we begin to develop our model and what things will be discussed within the work group. Secondly, I just fundamentally believe that principals, superintendents, school boards know their teachers better than we do, and I think that they're better to make those decisions about their ULA process than we are. Fundamentally, that's core to my belief. I think they've been in their classrooms, they've seen those teachers, and they have the right to make those decisions themselves locally.
Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree. And hence, I would like to see the seniority practice go away and allow those locals to make those decisions based on which teachers they think are best to stay in those classrooms. Because I don't know of any school district other than the hard-to-keep situations. I don't know of any school districts that keep their teachers based on that. They look at seniority, because then nobody does have to think. We don't give the school boards that and the principals, the administration, that ability to say, no, we want to keep our best teachers. So I would agree completely that we should let that local decide that. But we don't. We tie their hands with saying seniority is what is the rule.
Representative Wolf, I believe in the statute.
Senator Wolf, sorry.
Mm-hmm. I believe that we do allow that, and Subdivision 11 only takes into account if it's not negotiated ahead of time.
And Commissioner, just on that point, I mean, let's just, I think we should cut to the chase on that whole issue. I mean, to say that districts have the ability to negotiate an alternative to seniority is, I would say, grossly overstated. I mean, when you have a seniority mandate that backs that up, the union, if they prefer to the seniority mandate, can simply not negotiate and therefore end up with a default situation of seniority. So the table is stacked in favor of those who favor the status quo. And I think that's why you've seen not one person can point out an example in the state of Minnesota where teacher effectiveness and student learning has actually played into that decision-making process. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, thank you for being here with us this morning. What is your understanding of how much the state of Minnesota spends on education each biennium? In this current biennium, do you know approximately how much we're spending?
$14.3 billion.
And do you know what percentage of the overall state budget that is, roughly?
Half, a little bit more than half.
Okay, so you would agree that it's a very large percentage of what we're spending?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm troubled by what you... I wrote down words to the effect that you didn't understand what the state's economic interest in this was. When we're spending $14+ billion in a biennium and the largest percentage of our state's the state money, the government spending on this very important thing, I don't understand how you could say that you don't understand what the state's economic interest is in this. Can you expand on that statement, why you don't understand how this is related to the state's economic interest?
Sure. Senator Daley, because I'm coming from the frame of local decisions and local school boards making these decisions, And when I think about state policy, I try to frame it in the impact of the entire state and how it's going to help us move an agenda statewide. And I just believe strongly that the context of local control is something that's been a value of Minnesotans for a long time. And we elect school boards, appoint superintendents, and hire principals to do the work of ensuring that we have great teachers and good and fair processes and systems in their school districts. And I just believe that that's exactly where that should land, this particular policy, rather than at the state level.
And with that local control in some of these school districts, we have, if not the largest achievement gap in the country, one of the largest achievement gaps in the country. It seems to me that there are so many interests that we all have, and we're not achieving what we need to achieve. If we continue to do what we're doing, we're going to get the same results we've always gotten. And to have the largest achievement gap that in the country, if not the largest, one of the largest, I'd suggest that there is an enormous interest on behalf of all of us. And if local control is what we've done, and that's getting us the largest achievement gap in the country, maybe we should consider doing something else. Maybe this is a good idea. Maybe we should consider this, trying something different.
Commissioner, I think there is some virtue from my vantage point in local control. Would that mean that you would favor the repeal of Subdivision 11, which would be the state mandate for seniority? I mean, that way we can just have the locals make those decisions.
I think that local control should be done. I think that the local school districts ought to be able to negotiate their own ULA process.
So you do favor the repeal of the statute that mandates seniority be the only criteria when that doesn't happen?
I believe that we need to have a default position. Just like in our teacher evaluation, we have a default position. We ask them to negotiate a teacher evaluation system. If they can't, we have the default where they have to take the state position. And currently, the state position and the current law is that they use seniority in orderly fashion.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, this is actually pretty tough for us sitting around this table because education is the one issue which most of us believe should not be a partisan issue. And we want to be your partners and, you know, think very much of your commitment to make sure that we close the achievement gap and the fact that you've been able to get these waivers and get Race to the Top for early childhood is indicative of your very strong commitment. And so so it's difficult for those of us sitting around this table who feel so strongly that that this is just common sense by a wide, wide margin, that if we're going to lay somebody off, we want it to be first those who are least effective. And we can't even really begin to understand why you wouldn't want to do that. So, for example, your comment, reform overload, I don't think that's fair to those teachers who are embarking on some things that have technology and data have availed themselves to those teachers. I don't think it's certainly fair to the students who aren't doing well. I don't think having a 4 years from now system in law that says the least effective teachers go first could possibly be a reform overload. With regard to the 35%, that passed. It's the law. So holding this provision up because of concern with regard to that, I don't think is defensible. And with regard to your concern on teachers spending time thinking about using the teacher evaluation for this tool versus being innovative, I think it's very important that teachers know how the tool will be used as they design it. I'm proud that the law we passed last year, with your help, said the predominant voice on that task force are teachers. I was at a store yesterday, and this woman came up to me out of nowhere and said, "I'm a teacher at Alice Smith. thank you for your work on education. I've been getting people coming up to me everywhere. I have young people who are calling me, thanking me, because they're probationary teachers, and they are so grateful for the opportunity to stay in the classroom based on their effectiveness. The reason I first got involved in this issue is because I was getting calls at home from upset parents in my district saying, my child had the most extraordinary teacher. They got laid off. I came to this issue because of my concern for children. My concern came from the outpouring from the community with regard to this issue. In addition, I listened to nationally strong voices from people I have great respect for, like, you know, the president and Secretary Duncan, talking about how important this particular reform is. And so that we are not, in a bipartisan way, working. And I'm interested in hearing your suggestions of how to make this fair and equitable. But delaying it, to me, is not one of the alternatives, because I wish it were much sooner. So I'm looking for your suggestions. I want to be your partner in this. And I want us to move from the conversation around not now to how can we do this, and how can we do it in a way that at the end of this session we are all pleased with the outcome.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, at our last meeting we had an interesting time, even though our senators were having to run up and down to take roll call votes, but Mr. George Parker was here speaking to us. He was a math teacher in the Washington, D.C. schools and served a couple terms as their union president and negotiator. And I wish you had been here to hear him, because he'd gone through kind of a metamorphosis on this issue. And as he had disregarded anything other than the seniority-based layoff, he started to realize that this was not in the best interest of children, and turned the tide. And they, in fact, did negotiate a contract that changed that course. And 80% of the faculty members, a lot of them said they didn't support it, but 80% voted for that overall contract. But what was kind of interesting in one of the, I think it was a response to a question about timing, because we've been spending a lot of time about timing, and I think it raised the issue that we often see in the basic psychology of working with people, was the timing of putting it in place. They had been working on an evaluation system, which was a slog. I mean, it was slowly coming along. And he said when they passed the LIFO provision, they got the teacher evaluation done within a year. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that if we say that we've got to wait to put this in until we get the teacher evaluation system, well, if that isn't a license to drag feet, I don't know what is. Because the longer you wait, then the longer that it will take before you ever get, and maybe by that time it'll go away, of changing anything about the layoff being tied at all to teacher performance. And so that to me was kind of a strong statement, that the argument that we've got to wait until we get this done just plays into the hands of those who want the status quo, and the things are not going to change. And so I think what you talked about, that what we have is a default position. Well, we're trying to change the default position. We're trying to change it into position. We want locals to make decisions, and they will be making decisions. But in this particular area, I think we need a stronger policy from this end, because the state does have the responsibility for the education of the children. And we've set up a system to do that. And we believe in local control. We believe that parents should have a strong role, because they are the children belong to them, as well as they have a responsibility to develop them as in an educational fashion. It's in our statute. So But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have positions that will drive an environment in our public schools that will, in fact, be meaningful and the right direction for children. And so I wish that you would rethink, as George Parker did, and become a real champion of this kind of change of practice, because it's what will make a difference, and it will bring it about faster. If anything that might be wrong with our bills, it's having stretched it out, of trying to be accommodating and saying we'll give all this time to get this evaluation system in order before this goes into place. And perhaps that's what we ought to be changing if we really want to get it to happen.
Commissioner, and again, I stated this earlier, I think this meeting should be about, you know, asking pointed questions, but also trying to find common ground. You expressed your reservations about House File 1870 and it being implemented. Is it the will of yourself and the administration not to act on this issue? And if not, do you have an alternative suggestion? I think the public ought to know.
Yeah, Representative Peterson, I think that we met privately and we've met with the governor and we've talked about this issue. And acting this year, I said, I thought was putting the cart before the horse before the teacher evaluation was done. So, yes, moving forward, it's very difficult. I would like to see the teacher evaluation group work with this provision and look at some recommendations as we have outlined in our waiver.
So just to clarify, the position is not to act on this issue this year, correct?
Well, I can't say what the governor would want to do or not do with this. I can only tell you that I believe that the timing is incorrect in this position right now, and that there's still so many unanswered questions, and I'd like to see the teacher evaluation work group be able to work those through.
So you've been clear on your opposition to taking up the ULA issue this year. Even with that said, do you have suggestions as to how this bill could be better, even though you still may not approve of it in the end? Do you have suggestions, constructive suggestions, as to how we can approach this issue more fairly?
Well, Representative Peterson, I did make a suggestion that local districts look at the context of their personal situations and be able to make decisions locally. I think that could be stronger language there. I do think we need to fix all of the data privacy pieces here and address that, as well as address the teacher evaluation in the non-tested areas. That's my largest concern, is that we have teacher evaluation systems that are fair, that they're defensible, because what we could do is end up with a lot of unintended consequences, like not being able to staff hard-to-staff schools, not being able to assign students who need the best teachers, you know, our achievement gap students. I want to be able to really look at all of the unintended impacts of this policy before we move forward.
Senator Bonhoff pointed out something that you had said that I think is very relevant, and it's actually something that Education Minnesota's testifier in the last committee hearing also stated in so many words, which was the opposition or concern about the 35% attachment to measures of student progress. Of course, as Senator Bonhoff pointed out, that's current law. So it is a logical extension of that position to oppose any measure that would base its decision-making also on that law. But it is the law. So would you suggest that that law be changed? Was the governor wrong when he signed the bill last session?
Well, I know that the governor often says you sign things that you agree with, but you may not agree with. We were in a difficult session last year. We had spent a lot of time, as you remember, negotiating out the teacher evaluation bill. I was on record being against arbitrary percentages. It's still a difficult thing. I'm still very worried about how we'll be able to assess our teachers accurately. And fairly, where it's defensible. Arbitration costs a lot of money to school districts and can be quite distracting from the real work of helping kids. And so I have some concerns about that, and I'd just like to be able to look at all the impacts of the policies before we actually enact them.
Are you suggesting that the governor agreed to something he didn't agree with in this case?
I don't know what the governor thought when he was agreeing to and signing his bills. I can't speak on his behalf. I can only speak to my own.
Fair enough. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, this is a curiosity question, but I realize that you are the manager of several hundred employees. Do you lay them off based on seniority only?
It's by, they each have different contracts and how they are laid off. And I haven't had to be in that situation of laying off. We've done some restructuring and looked at our restructuring of our organization.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner, as you restructure, how important is performance as you restructure?
Well, performance is always important, Representative Erickson, as well as looking at the positions and the good and the best fit for that employee. I can talk about my previous experience as superintendent and as a principal. You always wanted to retain your best teachers, and typically great principals find a way to do that, even in tough budget situations. So I think that, it's a very difficult situation when you have to lay off teachers, good or ineffective.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just to move on to testimony that was submitted to us on March 23rd from a Minneapolis teacher who writes passionately about the repeal of LIFO, and I quote from her letter, "We know that low-income kids are disproportionately affected by last-in-first-out layoff decisions because there are larger concentrations of new teachers in high-poverty schools. When kids in high-need schools finally get the chance to have a great teacher, we shouldn't take that teacher away just because he or she has fewer years in the system. This only adds instability for children who need more of it." Would you comment on that passionate paragraph, Commissioner? Because I think in a nutshell, this is what teachers across the state are thinking, that, you know, if you have an effective teacher and this is a concentration of high poverty, these children are longing to learn. Their moms, their dads, their guardians at home want so much for them to achieve, and they lose that prize in the classroom, much like Senator Bonhoeff referred to earlier in conversations that have come to her. What do we do about this situation? Because these kids are getting left behind.
Representative Erickson, it is an impassioned paragraph, and it's basically what I lived my life every single day of my working career of these past 23 years, and so I know very clearly what she's talking about. And I think that's why Secretary Duncan has such a rigid proposal with his SIG policy and has the four federally mandated models. I think what's missing, and the reason I keep bringing up the whole overall reforms work and how you roll out a reform, is that there's this other piece of turnaround schools and how you work and innovate in turnaround schools, a whole other piece of legislation I think that we need for protections for schools that are priority schools. Certainly we're going to try to do that within the federal waiver with our priority and our focus schools and do the best that we can. But there may be some other policies that might come forth from the department to be able to intervene in those school districts a little bit differently when those schools are on the state's underperforming list for several years.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, do you have those policies coming to our committees before session ends so that we're ready to enact those if you see a need for, beefing up the waiver plan?
No. This is, Representative Erickson, I'm thinking in future years we'll do our waiver first. C does the local control work where we're working alongside school districts. If not, then I'm saying we may need to come back to this table and have a real discussion about how we work more aggressively in schools that are chronically underperforming.
Commissioner, it's my opinion that the NCLB waiver requirements are going to force our hand on House File 1870, and that, in fact, the current state law is incompatible with the NCLB waiver. And I'm just going to read to you from page 104 and then continuing to page 105 on the NCLB waiver. The question is, do the SEAs, in this case the department, interventions include all of the following, continued on page 105, ensuring that teachers are effective and able to improve instruction by reviewing the quality of all staff and retaining only those who are determined to be effective and have the ability to be successful in the turnaround effort, preventing ineffective teachers from transferring to these schools. It goes on and on. How can you read points one and point two and suggest that current law is compatible with that requirement?
Representative Peterson, we are in the process with the Teacher Evaluation Task Force to go through our entire evaluation and teacher effectiveness review, and that's what we have until 2014 to do.
Do you believe you have the ability to predict which schools could be the could be impacted by the ULA process over the next 3 years?
No, I don't believe that.
I don't think anyone does. And I guess my point is that there's no way for you to prevent your priority schools from being the victims of an arbitrary standard that's quality blind, while the NCLB waiver requirement, in mm-hmm. fact, requires us to make informed decisions about effectiveness of teachers. And I think that's fundamentally one of the problems that we have with current law, is that it is blatantly incompatible with the NCLB waiver requirements, and I believe it's at risk as a result of that. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Casilius, I'd like to also echo what's already been said here. Thank you for being here. I understand this is a significant amount of time out of your day, and I think this conversation is extremely important, so thank you for participating in that. I'm a little bit confused about your answer as far as restructuring your own department. I have always been under the impression, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that your employees are at-will employees. And I guess I'm concerned that if you were restructuring, or if you were forced because of budget constraints, I'm not satisfied with your answer on how you would do that, whether you would do that based on seniority or if you would do that based on performance. And then after that, I do have one other question.
Senator Cruz, my executive team is at will, but the rest is built on contracts. All of my classified employees are on contracts. And so I can dismiss on my executive team or hire based on performance.
Well, then, Mr. Chairman, just a quick follow-up to that question, Commissioner. Let's focus just on your executive team then. If you were evaluating your executive team because of budget constraints or any reason, doesn't even have to be budget constraints, whatever reason it may be, restructuring, would you base those decisions on the time that they had been with you and their seniority, or would you base that on performance?
Senator, I would base that on their tasks and what I want them to get done. And so it would be what position I had, for instance, assistant commissioner over charter schools or online learning or over teacher effectiveness or standards. It would be based on their skill set around being able to manage that, and that's how I've hired, to be able to manage that piece of the work that has to be done for schools.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, you know, I get where you're trying to go with that. I guess in my own understanding, what I'm kind of hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, let's call it a different kind of performance then. It's a performance based on tasks that you need them to do. And that I would humbly argue is a form of performance then. But with that being said, I've heard a lot today about how this is going to affect teachers. And it's very apparent that you've had a lot of great communication with teachers and teachers associations. My question to you is this. You know, we kind of serve a higher calling here, I believe, in the fact that above and beyond parents, there's a group, or above and beyond teachers, there's a group that cares more about these children, and that's their parents. So my question to you is this, with, you know, understanding that you have had a lot of communication with the teacher component of this, have you, since these bills have been passed, have you had an opportunity to talk directly to parents about what's going on? Because what we're hearing here as legislators, and in a very bipartisan way, is that we're having good teachers that are being laid off. We're having teachers that are making an impact on our constituents' children's lives. And there's a frustration level there that those are the teachers that are losing their jobs and going away. And I'm just curious if you've had an opportunity to, in any forum, talk to these parents. And secondly to that, if you've heard any of those same concerns.
Yes, I have had opportunity to talk to parents, and yes, I have heard those concerns. And I've also talked with other groups and lobbyists and others about this bill.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I forgot to mention another thing that was on my mind with regard to this legislation, and I'll use a personal story to highlight what I'm speaking of. My dad is 80, and yesterday he and I were taking a walk on a beautiful day, and he's actually been a tutor at Gatewood Elementary School in Hopkins for about the last 7 years. He tutors a couple days a week with low-income at-risk kids in reading. And he was actually given an honor last year for his work, and they had the whole school did a presentation, and they wrote a song about him, and it was called Read, 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 because he feels so strongly that reading is it. And I'm so proud of him that he's doing this in his later years. And he said to me that he had been working to try and create a scholarship for minority students to go into teaching. So he was trying to create a college scholarship, and he said, and I didn't even know he was working on this. He said he went to Cargill Foundation and talked to them, then he talked to all these foundations, and he said, this was a couple years ago, and he just couldn't get anywhere. And he said to me, what is going on with that? Why aren't we getting more minority, you know, teachers? Because he said, you know, here he is trying to tutor these kids, and they are mostly the ones he's tutoring are students of color. And he said, they don't want people like me. They want people who look like them. And I said, well, Dad, that's why I'm working on this bill so hard, because the problem is we don't have enough students of color going into teaching, and you're, you know, young people. And so one of the reasons that we can't even change that is because once they get into the schools, they're low on the seniority rung and they're let go. And so the very thing that I know you know, and I know that it would make a huge difference to have a stronger group that were teachers of color in our classrooms, and without changing seniority, we're not going to really get that. And so back to Chair Peterson's question, which I had never thought of that, that's a pretty interesting approach. If we can't agree on this particular language, is a short-term or interim step to just repeal the seniority provision. Also, of course, you'd want to put something in there about not allowing school districts to ever lay off based on salary or remuneration. Is that middle ground to just repeal the seniority provision?
Senator Olson, to your point about teachers of color, absolutely we need to do a better job of diversifying our workforce. And that's something that I think is another piece of policy I'd like to bring forward in future years. But again, it's all in how you roll out what you get done. And so in the current statute, there is a provision that allows for affirmative action plans. If you have an affirmative action plan in your school district, that you can not have to abide by the seniority. So knowing that that's already in the current policy to do protections of protected classes from the seniority provision in current statute. So to that, Yeah, and then in terms of the other compromise of the, I mean, I could certainly take it back and look at that again, but and I could do that.
Thanks.
Well, Commissioner,
that wouldn't help, by the way, Senator Bonoff. That wouldn't help with probationary, right? So that would be the, because they could let probationary go. So there would have to be a change in that statute as well.
Thank you. Still
can't let them go. Right. Well, Commissioner, I think a lot of people don't necessarily discriminate between the position of the Department of Education and the position of the governor. Obviously, the governor is the final decision maker, and I appreciate that as individuals you may have differences in opinion. And maybe it would have been more helpful to have someone from the administration, his direct staff, to come and testify today. To kind of summarize what I believe you've said today is that you're not necessarily interested in contributing to this process this year and not acting on this issue. And with that being said, I'm not sure what the committee can take away from that other than the fact that we hope the governor has a different opinion on the matter. Have you spoken with the governor about this issue? I know that we've met. I'm sure you guys have spoken about it at length.
Representative Peterson, we've spoken several times on this issue. And I know that the last time we met, you said that you had some bipartisan language you wanted him to look at. And I mentioned that in my voicemail to you the other day, and I still have not received that. So I don't think the governor's closed on it. I think we're waiting on, you know, if you had any bipartisan other suggestions or policy for him to consider, he may be open to considering that, but we have yet to see that.
Well, and for I guess if you're not willing to act on the issue, then it really doesn't matter what the alternative proposal is, and that's kind of where what I've been trying to bring out some potential common ground in this meeting here today. But what I've heard in response was simply a desire that we ought to just wait and not take action on the issue. I agree. There is bipartisan language. In fact, I know on the House side there's a Democrat author with, I think, 10 Democrat co-authors of a bill that also eliminates the seniority mandate and also includes elements of teacher effectiveness. But your fundamental objection to this whole process is really nothing related to House File 1870. It's based on the law that was signed by the governor last session. And so as long as that is, there are key members of the governor's own cabinet that are opposed to a law that he signed, I'm not sure that there can be common ground, at least as it relates to teacher effectiveness. Quite honestly, I did expect there to be some discussion and back and forth about the various concerns as it relates to this bill. I didn't expect you to come into the committee today and contend that the current system works well or that the current system is something that is fair. There is virtually nobody that agrees with that position. Outside of Education Minnesota and your testimony today, I have not heard from any organization, including Democrat lawmakers, that thinks that this system works well. In fact, if you go back and look at the House floor debate, about an hour and a half worth of video, there was not a single Democrat member who stood up that said that they thought the system worked well. In fact, there is almost universal agreement that changes need to be made. So I'm very surprised to hear that testimony here today. There's a wide array of coalition members that support this issue that all agree. And I think that view is a very extreme minority viewpoint. And I guess I would just end by asking you again, we are not wrapping the committee today. I would just ask again, and ask that you go back to the governor and make constructive suggestions as to what an alternative can be. We're not going to make an alternative suggestion unless you give us points as to what that should look like. You know, we've put forward a bill. We have some bipartisan support for that bill. We have a proposal before you. And before we know what we need to do differently, we need to have suggestions that are concrete in order to make those decisions. And I don't think it's the will of the House or the Senate to simply sit on our hands and act as if the current system works well, because I have not heard that from a single lawmaker in this body, regardless of party. But Commissioner, that's what I will leave you with, and I hope that we can hear some constructive feedback. If there are no other questions from the committee members, we'll stand adjourned. Commissioner, yep, my apologies. Feel free.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a couple of comments. One is I did bring suggestions a few weeks ago on how the policies could be made better, and I had some questions. I've reiterated those also today, so it's not a complete lack of engagement in wanting to move forward with the policy. As you stated, I think that those questions still have been unanswered for us. Also, I did suggest that local control was the best placement for this this policy, and that it would work well there and work better in the context of a local school district who knew their teachers and knew their processes and their systems better. Also, I wanted to just state that I also stated that the Teacher Evaluation Committee would be working on these issues as part of our waiver, as part of putting together the 35% non-tested areas, as well as the other pieces we have to work through in last year's legislation. And then finally, I said that this was part of timing and reform and how you roll out a whole strategy around improving our Minnesota schools. So I want to thank you and the committee members for giving me this time today, and I look forward to continuing to work with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I'll just say I agree with your point on local control. The problem is that the current state mandate, the default position, includes absolutely zero local control, and that our position includes a locally negotiated option, as well as the evaluation law itself has many elements of local control. So if that is indeed where your values lie, I would suggest that House File 1870 is the solution. And on that note, the committee is adjourned.
Thank you.